On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
Well, it wouldn't be Christmas at WTBF AM and FM if we didn't have an opportunity to talk to my buddy Joe Wheeler. Now, actually, Joe and I began talking before there was a WTBF FM because that's only been on the air 20 years. We've been talking now for 26, this is our 26th year of talking because it's the 26th edition of Christmas in My Heart, a treasury of old-fashioned Christmas stories compiled and edited by Joe L. Wheeler. It's from Pacific Press. If you haven't met him before by listening to On the Bookshelf, let me just say that Joe Wheeler is a most prolific author and compiler and editor. Dr. James Dobson has dubbed him America's Keeper of the Story, and I think that's a pretty good description of what Joe has done. Almost a one-man crusade to keep alive wonderful classic Christmas stories from the 19th and early 20th century. That without his work and without the work of thousands of people who have sent him stories through these 26 years, so many of these wonderful accounts would have been lost. And so, Joe, it's always a delight to welcome you back to On the Bookshelf.
Well, it makes me feel rather old, but I'm in good company. We're both 26 years older than we were in that first broadcast.
Yes, indeed. So one of the things that makes the book so fun is that the realization that you have gone through not just 30 or 40 stories and picked out the best 16 or so. Instead, you'll have hundreds of stories that you will have sifted through carefully and prayerfully in order to choose the ones for each edition. And there's always some that you like, but you think, I don't feel led to put them in this year's collection, right?
Yeah, I would say that we probably, in essence, sift through 100 stories for every one that makes it in. And one of the questions that's been asked of me quite often is, well, after all these years, are you running out of your best stories? And what I tell them is that, no, I keep buying, because I never want to come to a new season and essentially use the same pool of stories I had before. Because, you know, it may only be a nano whatever second or pixel difference, but our readers would tell the difference if I didn't bring in new stuff each year. And so then I pray my way through in putting these collections together over a several-month period, and I usually go through 10 to 15 drafts until I finally feel that I have God's sign-off on that particular collection.
I will say, too, and Joe and I have known each other long enough that sometimes I forget to tell people who don't know him just how big a deal he really is. He is the editor of compiler of 96 books by 16 publishers.
98.
98 now. Okay. See, that's what I get for using old press stuff here. 98 books now, because that's right, because that didn't include Christmas in My Heart 26 and another book that just came out. So 98 books by 16 publishers. Taught English in junior high, senior high, and college levels for 34 years. He chaired college English and communication departments at 3 universities and is considered the world's foremost authority on the life of times as Zane Grey. On top of all that, as well as blogging weekly for over 7 years, he has featured books he personally cherishes to Dr. Joe's Book of the Month for 5 years, and he also tweets a quotation a day. This has been going on for 6 years now. So if you want to get in touch with Joe, he's a pretty easy fellow to find.
I guess so. And whenever I hear a tribute like that, I think of something that the Reverend G.M. Farley, the other founder of the Zane Grey's West Society, when he heard something like that, he'd say, oh, I wish my mother could hear that.
Well, let's talk about this year's collection. Once again, you've gone through hundreds and hundreds of stories to choose just exactly the right ones to put in a particular collection. And as Joe has said earlier, but it bears repeating again, these are prayed over. These are stories that are not just cutesy little stories, although many of them are sweet, but these are stories that have a deep moral core that feature Christ as the center of Christmas, that have real values reflected in them. And sometimes the characters are somewhat superficial at first, and as they endure suffering or as they endure trials or tribulations or lessons in each story, that character grows by the end of the story. And that's another reason that they are worth saving and worth reading again and again.
It's interesting that you should mention that about growing slowly on you, because as you have noticed, I have, for instance, one story in this collection that has been on the cutting block for 26 years, and it was never right for it until, because it's a combination of stories that, as you know, I don't put two stories the same length together, the same subject together. I don't get two boohoo stories in a row. I've got to give relief. And the main prayer is, Lord, help me to choose these stories that you couldn't forget if you tried, and that have this emotional wallop. I often use the term Velcro, that once you hear a certain story, you can never get it out of your subconscious because it's there. And so, this is the kind of story we do. I remember I was signing in a Barnes & Noble one day, and a lady, it was a long line, and the lady got tapped from the person behind her, and she said, "Well, I don't know anything about this guy. What kind of books does he do?" And the lady said, "Well, it's the kind of stories that you cry a lot when you read." And the other lady turned around and started to leave, and so the one she was talking to tapped her on her shoulder and says, "Oh, don't leave. It's a good cry." So I think that it's a spiritually based good cry type stories. And it's also the fact that there are a lot of romantics out there. And Christmas is one of the most romantic, if not the most romantic, other than Valentine's Day, a holiday we have. And woe be to me if I don't have at least 20 to 25% of the stories being Christmas romances. And I noticed that of the Christmas stories that I have written, two-thirds of them are romance, Christmas romance stories, I guess because I'm a romantic at heart anyway.
Usually you have a story also that features one of the members of the nativity story in some detail or from a different angle. This collection, number 26, has one from the editors of David C. Cook called Mary Blessed Among Women, which is one of my favorites collection.
That's a powerful story. And of course, I have no one person to attribute it to. But one of the things that I've discovered in Christmas stories is there are thousands of stories written about the Holy Family at Christmas, but not many do you feel like you really get inside the character. And this is one that they must have had an inspired group of David C. Cook writers that got into this story, because you really feel you know Mary and Joseph in ways you never had before.
There's also another one that is a children's story that is tied into the nativity as well, and that's called The Story of the Star by Florence Morse Kingsley.
And that's a good story.
I liked very much also, and I thought this was particularly interesting because I know that you are the world's foremost authority on the life and times of Zane Grey, and the co-founder of the International Zane Grey West Society, and the executive director of that society. When you preface this particular story by saying, "This might be the very best Western Christmas story ever," Listen to the Bells by Catherine R. Britton. And after reading it, I think you actually have it right. And in that regard, and there are a lot of great Western Christmas stories, but this one is really spectacular.
Yeah, this is written by Catherine Britton. She was a regular among Christian magazine writers during the first half of the last century. And this one is actually novelette length. It's four different issues stirred into this one story.
Ah.
And I kept postponing using it because it's a long story.
Yeah, yeah.
But I finally felt this year was the time for it, and I love that story.
Yeah, oh, it's really neat. Now I understand why it was so long, because it was in a periodical. And a lot of these stories did come from great magazines that aren't really around anymore, or that have changed so dramatically that these type of stories, you can't ever imagine them appearing in, say, Esquire or something like that. But Saturday Evening Post and magazines of that type, there were a lot more of those back in the first half of the 20th century.
Yeah, this I get most of my stories actually from old magazines. And one of the things that is very poignant and still tragic is that there has been such a mass slashing, cutting up, dissecting of old magazines that 40 years ago, when I started first collecting these, there were millions and millions of these that still existed, these wonderful family magazines that were published from the 1980s until the 1950s. Actually, many of them died during the Great Depression. And then when television came roaring in after World War II, magazines slash reading began to die. And so because you can get more for the covers and more for ads than you can for the magazine itself, we've gone from, when I first started, you could pick up Wonder, a Ladies' Home Journal, Good Housekeeping, and so on, pick up one for 25, 50 cents. Today, many of them started $100 each. And if I hadn't started collecting these magazines back then, I would never be able to have the treasure trove that that I have today. But the sad thing is that even though I have this large archive holdings, I still have to buy new ones, and it's kind of jolting to see how much I have to pay for one that's old today.
Yeah, I can imagine. You've got a couple of stories in here, as you always do, that are concerned with either guys during a war or guys who have been through a war. And collection number 26 is no exception. And in case you're just joining us, and if you are, you're late, but you're welcome anyway. We're talking once again to my friend Joe Wheeler, whose 26th edition of Christmas in My Heart, a treasury of old-fashioned Christmas stories, has just been released by Pacific Press. And all of these are still published and can probably be found and not just on eBay and Amazon. You can go to Joe's website and find out more about that. And Joe's website, what is
that's JoeWheelerBooks.com.
So let's talk about, there's three of them in here that in particular struck me. One of them is called Something in the Sock by Ruth Comfort Mitchell. It deals with a young man who was scarred in World War One, and the story takes place during the Great Depression. It's really, really good.
Yeah, I love that story because it is creating a post, right after World War One, there was no GI Bill. There was no reimbursement for injuries you had had during the war. There were no prosthetic limbs, and you were stuck with whatever condition you were in. And as you study that time period, you discover that there were untold thousands of veterans that were on the streets begging for enough money so they could meet their next meal. And so this is one story that has to do with that. It's a totally different approach to a war than any other war story I've ever come across.
There's another one that deals with soldiers who have been wounded, but these are ones who were critically wounded, and in many cases seriously maimed in combat. This is taking place toward the end or right after World War II is over, and these guys are in a unit recuperating from their catastrophic wounds. And it's really interesting because it features a character who is universally disliked. That's Old Iron Puss by Arthur Gordon.
Yes. That story, by the way, this Arthur Gordon is one of our most famous editors in American history, and also one of the most famous short story writers. And this is the 19th time that I have gone back to Arthur Gordon. And he told me about this story. Arthur Gordon himself was a lieutenant colonel, and he had gone through a lot of wartime experiences. And he says, this is one that has been so special to me that I've never let it get published in book form before. It was originally published in the Saturday Evening Post, and the Saturday Evening Post editors considered it so significant that they published it in their greatest stories ever published by the Saturday Evening Post. And Gordon told me, and this was just not long before he died, and he said, I am honored to think that its place is in Christmas in my heart. But it is such a different approach to what happens when you are incapacitated, especially physically. And so you don't have a leg, you don't have legs, you don't have arm or arms. And in a day before prosthetic limbs, how would you feel? Wouldn't you want to end it all? You wouldn't have any reason to live. And this one, I think, is one of the greatest stories we have ever included in any of our 98 books.
Yeah, yeah, it is a powerful story. And do we want to give away a little bit more of it, or suffice it to say that part of the reason this nurse allows herself to be this way is for a good purpose?
Yeah, it has to do with something that was said to Arthur Gordon himself by one of the coordinators there in this Army hospital, and to the effect that the greatest fear they have, or at least had back then, was not anger, but apathy, in which they would essentially give up and just die. And it took a special person that would be nasty to them, voluntarily nasty and unpopular, in order to jolt them out of their apathy. And I had never even thought of that aspect until I first read this story. Yeah, Old Iron Puss is a story for the ages.
Yeah, yeah. The other war story is entitled The Three Strangers by Paul McAfee. It's from, it takes place during the Korean War. And the three strangers are American GIs. It is quite an interesting and different story.
Yes, and the Korean War is one that doesn't get much notice.
Yeah.
It is such a part of our history.
Now,
and it's such a part of the world we're living in today still.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's another. Now I will mention, this is the first time that I can remember, and you may have done this and I've just forgotten, that is, that you included some scripture. You have the scriptures from Luke and from Matthew that give the Christmas story.
Yeah, I've never done that before in the 26 years, and I just felt this year was the time to do it. And those two scriptural passages are the basis for my entire 26 books of Christmas stories.
Right. One more cool one, and then when I want to talk about yours, and that was Frank Bennett's A Wise Man. Well, as a musician myself, this is such a sweet story, a lovely story of a man who makes a huge sacrifice something that he has always wanted, and he chooses not to keep it because he knows there's another musician who can use it better than he ever could hope to.
I have used several of Bennett's wonderful stories, but this is one that was so powerful that I've let it sit for a number of years now, just waiting for the perfect time to use it. And I think, as I point out in my introduction, I think it is easily one of the greatest musically based Christmas stories ever written.
Yeah,
and it has that wonderful illustration, which I that was the one that came with the story. And the story itself, when I shared it recently with a well-known concert violinist, she just wrote back saying that was one incredible story.
Yeah.
And I think that anybody into music is going to go back to that story again and again.
Yeah, yeah, that's the truth. And I saved a little time to talk about your contribution, because one of the things that Joe always does is he writes the introduction, and he always contributes a story that runs as the last story. And this one, I really do think that might be the very best one that you've ever done. You've done a lot of really good ones, but I have to admit that including Temple Bailey into and incorporating her into this, or her works into this story, made it moved it up to an entirely different level. It's really, really good. The story is Christmas at Solomon Shore. And this is an original one from Joe.
Now, as you know, Temple Bailey is one that we have been making new devotees for years and years.
Yes.
People are now rediscovering her through our books.
Right.
A wonderful writer. And when I was a teacher, I sometimes worked in dramatic productions. And this is one that I thought, wouldn't it be fun to do a play within a play? And that was, again, as I was praying for a year, and finally the Lord impressed me, take Temple Bailey's story and put it in play form, but make a play that's over it. In other words, you have two plots going at the same time. And the Lord, I feel confident, really came through for me with that story, because I never write a word of my stories without waiting for the Lord to give it to me. I never even begin a plot. The plots are His. I never know until the last word of the story how it's going to come out, because the Lord's writing it, not me. And this one, within 1 week from now, it is being performed in a Christian academy in Pennsylvania. One of my former students, who's an English teacher, she decided, wouldn't this be a great one to put on as a dramatic production in her academy? So I'll be very interested in what kind of response she has for it.
Oh, that's really neat. Do we want to give them the setup for the story, so that at least we can tease them into wanting to read the entire story? Do we want to tell the story of this is a mom?
Well, it's a mother who is facing the problems of a widowhood, a single parent raising rambunctious kids that refuse to be corralled, and having a terribly difficult time dealing with it, and then she has two younger kids that are coming at Christmas in an entirely different direction, and so it's a story that I have as the core, the way Temple Bailey told it, and then I have a high school student, a young girl who is caught in the backwash of what appears to be a permanent nasty divorce.
Yeah.
And so somehow she kind of loses her equilibrium, as so many children of divorce do. pardon me, in this case, I'm mixing my own self up. It wasn't in this case divorce, but it was death by the husband. And so at any rate, so we have these two stories, and I had no idea how the Lord was going to make it work until the last word was written.
Well, I think it works remarkably well, and as much as, and I'm one of those that has learned who Temple Bailey was and what she, and the way she wrote through your series. So I owe you that, not only for all the other wonderful stories, but just discovering who Temple Bailey was and what great stories she wrote.
She was one of the most popular writers in America during her time.
You know, what a shame that she is really not very well known anymore. Except for people who read, who have read these books that you have compiled, and hopefully that they that will be another way to keep her legacy going, and by incorporating her work into your work, I think it just made a really powerful. Like I said, I like this one the best of all the ones that you have written.
But I would say the people that really treasure her now are the ones that call themselves completists. I had some workshops in British Columbia this summer, and I was amazed that even up there in Canada, I had so many people that came to me and they would whisper, "I have them all." So I would say untold thousands of people now, because there have been over a million of the Christmas books sold now. Out of those thousands, and I'm always discovering new ones, they have them all. And they stay in the Christmas mood all year long. They cycle through. When they finish going through all of them, they start all over again. They're the happiest people you'll ever meet.
I think that is another wonderful legacy of the series. Our guest once again, and again, it would not be Christmas to me without getting a chance to talk to Joe. And I'm so delighted that every time we get a chance to talk, he has a new book to talk about. This is the 26th. Edition of Christmas in My Heart, a treasury of old-fashioned Christmas stories compiled and edited by Joe L. Wheeler. It's from Pacific Press, and go to his website, joewheelerbooks.com. If you'd like to follow him on Twitter, I think I've got that information. He blogs at joewheelerbooks.com. He tweets at twitter.com/joewheelerbooks, so you can follow him.
My tweets are quotations. I used to always put a quotation on the board each day in my classroom, and my former students, after I got into what I'm doing, they said, "Well, can't you do it again? I have my favorite quotations." So for all these years now, I've been, if you're one of those that loves day brightening quotations, well, check out our quotations. You can dig up 6-7 years worth now.
Wonderful. Joe, thank you again. It is always such a pleasure to talk to you, and I wish you and your family the very merriest of Christmas. Thank you so much for being with us for the 26th time. And this is not, now Joe has been with us on some other occasions to talk about other books, but this is the 26th time that we've talked at Christmas, and I sure I cherish these times we get to spend together.
Well, it's the good Lord willing, I just submitted the manuscript for Christmas 27, so okay. Looks like we may get together again a year from now.
Excellent. I look forward to it very much. Take care, Joe, and thank you again. God bless you for your work and for Christmas in My Heart 26.
And may the Lord bless every individual who is listening to the broadcast.
Once again, joewheelerbooks.com is Joe's website. Check it out. I think you'll find an incredible array of books and compilations that are on there. He has been involved in 98 different books for 16 different publishers. Thanks so much for joining us on The Bookshelf as we kick off the Advent season. We'll see you next week right here on your favorite radio station. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. And I remind you that my wife, Becky, has done a wonderful job in getting my website up and going again. Check it out for yourself on thebookshelf.biz. Again, thanks for listening, and God bless.